All statements, views, and opinions are personal and do not represent the United States government, the Department of Defense, or the United States Army. Welcome to the Center for Army Lessons Learned podcast, Insights from the Fight, the podcast dedicated to bringing you lessons learned from exercises, warfighters, and Army fielded forces. I'm your host, Mr. Jeremy Sturmer. Today, we're discussing lessons learned by 112 Infantry during their support along the southern border. We'll discuss how they approached the mission, how conditions impacted their operations, and how they directed and led their organization to achieve success. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. I'd like to give you a minute each to introduce yourselves to our audience as we prepare to talk about some of your lessons learned.
I'm Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Harrison, been in command of 112 Infantry for about 2.5 months. And previously in my career, I've been airborne, light, and striker, and actually did my Major KD time in this same battalion.
Sergeant Major?
I am Command Sergeant Major Kirby Floyd Odom, Jr. I am a Red Warrior 7, Battalion Command Sergeant Major for 112 Infantry. I have been striker my entire career, other than being an instructor in a couple of different places. And I've been in this seat since April of 2024.
I'm Staff Sergeant John Barsanti, been a intel analyst for about 13 years and been with the unit since the beginning of the year, acting as the battalion S2 NCOIC.
Let's start by going back to the beginning. When you first received orders for the border mission, what were your immediate thoughts and concerns, and what was the key guidance that you were given to your team in order to begin planning?
Oddly enough, the previous commander for the battalion and I were at division when other units inside the Division 4ID were initially being told that they were going to pull up, pack their connexes, and get down here. Colonel Wolschlegel and I were up there. Actually, it was a pretty hectic time when Division first got the notification. And for us, it started to not really induce panic, but it started to get the wheel spinning, as in, are we going to go? Because we had already been slated to go to Thailand for Hanuman Guardian and Cobra Gold, and we were going to take 2+ companies. Not the full battalion. We were going to leave one company back who was supposed to be going to NTC as support. So for us, initially, there's no way we're going, no way we're going to go. We already have our dance card filled out somewhere else. And then when we were notified that, yes, we're going to go, a lot of things had to change. We already had equipment on a ship that was heading to Thailand. We had to condense who was going. The two companies that were going to do the live fires became one company doing both live fires. We split the headquarters, if you will. The battalion commander time, Colonel Wolschlegel, went forward. My ops sergeant major went forward. And I stayed at the rear to push people in both directions. And our major come down, our XO, the S3, went forward to Thailand. So we were split all over the place, just trying to manage two missions at the same time. Our XO and another sergeant first class came down and did a very thorough, as in thousands and thousands and thousands of miles of driving to find where we were going to live. So just all the planning and the immediate resourcing that we had to get done was, it was an eye opener. It got a little stressful trying to figure out to whose watch, when's, and where's. Luckily for us, we sent the right people down and the right people to Thailand for both missions to be successful.
Yes, with that condensed timeline of us getting notified, having to push down here, I was actually a part of the PDSS, the pre-deployment site survey. So I came down, so representative of the S2, a couple S3 reps, S6, S4, and some of the maintenance individuals, as well as the battalion XO. So we were able to preview the land, really get a understanding of how vast this part of Texas is, how many miles is in between all of the locations that we were possibly going to be manning, seeing the type of terrain, how austere it was, and then also trying to figure out, you know, how is everyone going to live down here, eat, get fuel moved, and do missions? So that was very much an eye-opener. Had a good team, good representation of all the different shops to go down there, get eyes on the problem, give their opinions, options to try and figure that out. Along with, we didn't quite know from a higher echelon how we were going to be operating, so we had to have kind of multiple contingencies for, are we going to live here, or do we have to live here? How are we going to be spread out? And then also just not exactly knowing what type of missions we were going to be running based off of the information we're given. So it was very much get down here, meet as many of the partners in the area, get their inputs, how they need support, all of that, and then returning back and doing a real deliberate planning process with that to present it to the rest of the battalion to push that out, have already ideas of what was going to be needed from the get-go versus maybe items or certain types of individuals that didn't need to come immediately, but could come in some of those follow-on waves as we establish kind of our foothold of our operations down in this area.
The first I was aware of the mission change was when I got a phone call from Brandon Wolfschlegel from Thailand telling me that the brigade had been redirected. This was a big surprise, as Sergeant Major mentioned. I think it's worth noting that the brigade had returned from Korea the year prior, supported cadet summer training throughout the previous summer, had done training in the fall, and was in the middle of both a training glide path and red cycle. So even in the midst of that, with all those competing priorities, the leaders had to rapidly pull together how to move personnel and equipment halfway around the world into what was a very immature theater. This JTF Southern Border and then Task Force Mountain Warrior, our brigade headquarters, as well as our battalion, took it, as they already stated, from very loosely defined mission set into what is now a much more mature partnership with law enforcement and the Border Patrol.
Excellent. As you talk about that, understanding the problem sets that you guys were going to encounter, how did you and the staff go about understanding the requirements that you were going to have, how you started to conduct your mission analysis, and how you started to look at how you're going to do troop to task on this mission?
Yes, sir. Well, initially, we were not supposed to be in Texas. We were going to be as far west as the Joint Task Force was going to allow us to be, sort of being in San Diego, which was owned by the Marine Corps. So we were going to fall in that area between San Diego and Yuma, Arizona. So we were starting to look at that. We were figuring out what the terrain's going to be like. Can we use strikers there? Can we not use strikers there? Once it was changed to Southwest Texas, and we started to figure out that, yes, we can bring the strikers down here, which was not an original call. That did not happen until later on. But the biggest issue we were going to run into was there's zero military established housing, you know, lodging, any food, any type of facilities at all down here. So our biggest issue was, where are we going to live? How are we going to spread out our companies in order to cover the, you know, the 500 plus miles of border that we were allocated? And understanding that there's a lot of civilian considerations down here with the national park, Big Bend National Park, down the southern area of our operating area. Just being aware of the fact that we're going to be the sore thumb, if you will. We're going to stick out. We're going to be not really ruining people's day, but we're going to be in the way, if you will, of somewhere who, you know, they never have any military around. Just being aware of that fact. And anyone that was deployable was going to come. We knew that our area was vast and we were going to need every single person that we could to be on the line and to help get this mission squared away. Sergeant Basanti.
Yes, as we came down on that PDSS, we were able to get into contact with Sector, which would be kind of the equivalent of the battalion headquarters, but for the Border Patrol. So we were able to get in contact with them, establish what days we're coming down to have a meeting with them, kind of bring in who in their departments would be like the best representatives. From there, they were able to kind of branch us out to all the stations that we'd be covering down on in the area. So the stations kind of are like the company size equivalent. So with each of those, each day we would be going out to stations, meeting some of that leadership there who, you know, they live and operate here for X amount of years. So they know the terrain, they know who are good partners in some of the civilian agencies or even the local leaders and such. So very much they were able to put us into contact with those individuals. The Border Patrol was willing to put on kind of a town hall for us. So they brought in all of the local leaders, whether it's judges, some of the police force, the other stations, for us to meet with each other, get good points of contact for us to be able to go back to them, and they could help us figure out, you know, which problems, if we're coming up to a problem, who would be the best individual that we could possibly go out to and meet with. Along with when we were on that PDSS, each of those stations and partners were taking us out on tours of the area to show us, you know, sites that, hey, this is an area that's a concern for us, or B, this is an area that we think would be good for operating in with the type of equipment that you have, and then highlighting their questions and concerns as well.
When you zoom out over history, this is not really a new relationship or even a new mission for our unit. We've got photos of 12th Infantry Regiment soldiers standing across from their Mexican Army counterparts in Nogales over 100 years ago. But what is different about this mission versus some of the previous support from the department is how we're integrating. That was one of the initial challenges of understanding what unique military capabilities we have and how we can be complementary to Border Patrol, which had its 101st anniversary as organization this past year. So they've got a lot of experience and have been doing this mission for a long time. But our cultures are not the same. So learning how to create shared language and understanding to integrate, that was one of the first challenges. Some of the stations that we mentioned before were hoping that we were mechanics that would help them repair their fleet. We had explained we are not. We are a striker infantry formation. So let's explain what we can do for you. And talking about how we developed a framework that we called the 3 D's, which is to deter, which is an overt mission, detect, which is in combination with technology and personnel that already exist in theater, but also with the capabilities we brought. And then the third is to enable detention or decision by law enforcement. There is a small national defense area in our AO, but that is the last in the priority because we are heavily focused on ensuring that as many Border Patrol agents are freed up to do the things only they can do by putting ourselves at key locations to stop illicit activity.
Colonel Harrison, if you could, just describe to me the mission that your unit was given and how you approached it.
Well, if you want to think about what the mission is, fundamentally, we're in a competitive space against a patient, intelligent, and motivated adversary. And the mission at its heart is about preserving human life. That's either taking narcotics off the streets to safeguard Americans. It's keeping violent organizations and individuals out of our sovereign territory, and it's rendering aid to distressed persons, and often people who are treated as a commodity by these criminal organizations. So that's really what we're doing. When you think about the Army's motto, "This will defend," we are literally defending the homeland. The way we're doing that is enabling control of the border. So emplacing our military capabilities to identify where illegal activity may occur, and then employ interagency and joint force to ensure that it's not permissive and we're able to stop those illicit activities.
Okay, you guys have talked a little bit about how you started to see the mission while you were doing your site surveys. Once you started to deploy, how did you address the cultural differences and then build the relationships between those interagencies? What were the things that made it easy for you to partner with Homeland Security who were trying to work on this mission with you?
I think it starts with mutual trust and respect, being honest with each other, and then being in communication regularly over time. I firmly believe that the human terrain is decisive terrain. When you build strong relationships, it's going to overcome bureaucracy. So especially in what we already said was a fairly immature theater, with authorities and capabilities changing continuously since we first got here, just having those conversations and going through what is really the targeting process to understand this is what our adversary is doing, this is what we can do to counter it, here are some options to do that together. That's where it starts. You know, when you think about the end state of this mission, the most important one is to retain the trust of the American people. And that started with the local community, but then it definitely feeds out into the larger mission, because there's no termination criteria for defense of the homeland. So we've got to ensure that we were retaining the trust of local citizens, and 99.99% of them are incredibly grateful and supportive to us, and then also with our partners. So understanding, going back around to what can we do? These are the tasks we can provide for you. How does that enable you to do things you haven't been able to do before?
Sergeant Major, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Yes, sir. When we first got on the ground, we were not given free roam of the place, so to speak. Anything we did literally side by side, same vehicle with Border Patrol. They showed us, like Sergeant Brasanti said, the terrain. They gave us instructions and classes on how to run the equipment that we're using out here in surveillance and detection. The relationships we built doing those patrols initially with these agents has actually carried on. Now that we don't have to physically have a Border Patrol with us, they are an absolute asset for us, as we are for them. If we do detect someone, they have the ability to detain. And as of right now, without that, you know, National Defense Area, we do not. So just learning their lingo, how they name their different terrain features, and for example, Yellow Gate or whatever it is their shifts and their stations call it. Just learning how Border Patrol operates was the biggest thing right up front. Many of our soldiers, if they have deployed, they were not patrolling with local law enforcement or, you know, another Homeland Security agency. So they really did not have the experience. So therefore, they didn't really have bad habits. So we picked up on it really quickly. Our leaders got involved with Border Patrol's leaders, weekly meetings, sometimes daily meetings. And every company is assigned to a to a station. So they're constantly in and out, working side by side with these agents. And that's what allowed us to go from a crawl walk to a run very quickly during the mission.
I think it's important to note the breadth of the mission that this battalion has had. We're responsible for 557 miles of the southern border. So that's about one quarter of the entire border. And it's more or less the same size as eastern Paktika to western Helmand in Afghanistan. So where in my past deployments to Afghanistan, you would have multiple brigades responsible for that area, we've got one battalion. So making sure we're being effective and efficient has been really important. And as Sergeant Major just said, once we were able to demonstrate good faith and ability, it allowed us to become more effective over time. It's also worth noting, you know, OPSEC is very necessary and very real because it's a huge area and because the drug trafficking organizations and the transnational criminal organizations, which are the two terms we use to talk about what most people would probably refer to as the cartels, they're a very patient and well-resourced adversary. So we had to make sure that we're not falling into any predictable patterns for things we didn't want to be predictable. We wanted to be tactically unpredictable, but operationally predictable, so that we could be effective at both the deter and the detect portions of our mission specifically.
Okay, well, let me dive into that a little bit more, Colonel Harrison. So you talked about having your unit spread out over a significant geographical area. Talk to me about how you executed mission command in an environment where you were going to have to rely on units to be operating away from you, particularly when they're operating in an area where perceptions are really going to matter. How you enabled your commanders, what kind of guidance you gave them, and then how that worked out for you.
If we start with trust is a two-way street, you got to give it to receive it. That was the first part, is when I came in and having conversations with the leaders on the ground, I told them, hey, you have all the trust up front that I need because it's absolutely necessary to execute mission command, mutual trust. The other part was we had to win and retain the trust of law enforcement, mostly Border Patrol, that's our primary partner, and then the local population. And understanding that they'd already set conditions for all that and built on it, and we've only honestly been able to get stronger over time because they understood that. When we made enduring partnerships with local judges and civic leaders and teachers and schools and Border Patrol agents and everyone else, and then continue to interact with them, that's what has carried us through across the board, because we have to trust them to do their job and they can trust us to do ours. I think Sergeant Major can attest to the fact that this is a small community. And the reason I say that is he's very well integrated after having been on ground for 7 months. He knows everyone in the gym, for example, and uses that as an engagement opportunity to build those, keep those relationships going. Knowing that we are going to be spread into at least three very disparate locations, we focused on defining what our mission is, understanding that the end state is what you have to keep in mind continuously, so you can deviate left and right within the commander's intent as long as that is what you're focused on, and then being very, very deliberate about managing risk, never departing on a patrol without the right C2 equipment, without the right medevac equipment. PCCs and PCIs are something where you can't cut any corners, because it is the United States, but it is still the Wild West out there in some respects. The terrain itself is a significant obstacle. The weather in the summer was a significant obstacle. So ensuring that we had everything we needed to manage the risk to accomplish our mission.
I'm going to jump over to Sergeant Barsanti for a minute. As a member of the staff, you know, the commander gives out his guidance on what your mission is. He's out doing battlefield circulation along with the Sergeant Major. How does that information get translated back to you on the staff? And then how did you do your job as a intel fusion expert to not only be able to take information in from outside agencies, but then provide it down to the company so that they could execute?
So one of the key things with that is building those relationships out. Having us all co-located with Border Patrol, extremely helpful. We're operating with them day in, day out, 24/7, regardless of if you're on shift or someone else from the section is on shift. So that information flow is really easy to be able to go up to kind of like their equivalent of an operations center, asking the questions of what's going on, or we've seen this activity, or you guys seen this, and passing it over, especially with that quote unquote, they're the action arm. So if we're seeing activity, but they're not in that area, getting that information over to them in a timely manner so that they can respond. And then in addition to that, like we're saying, building out the relationships, finding out which other partners are in the area. So whether it's the HSI, the Homeland Security Investigations, FBI operates out here, along with, since we have the National Park, working with the National Park Center for some of those pieces of information to get those. In addition to that, we're staying in a constant state of passing information, whether between the partners, but also within the staff, to the companies, the battalion, and then up to brigade as well, doing our CUBS, so the commander update briefs, passing out the SITREP, and then the different working groups that go into that to connect all the echelons and have them mesh and be operating on a common operating picture. That way, everyone is aware of what's going on at each level, and all the bubbles are flattened. It's really the best way to operate. Might have had some hiccups at the start, trying to get things going, especially with infrastructure, connectivity, but, you know, as you're going along, as long as you're constantly improving your foxhole, you know, you're making progress along on that front.
As the soldiers of your unit started to execute their mission, what surprised you most about the realities on the ground? Kind of opportunities or challenges did you encounter that caused you to have to change some of the initial guidance that you had given out?
Yes, sir. One of the biggest things we've had to fight really is complacency and boredom. Without the taskings and the authorizations, just because we are DOD, we're, you know, active duty, we're not allowed to detain. So our soldiers do a lot of watching, and they're watching 24 hours a day. They're, you know, they're staring at a camera system in a vehicle. On their part, a young soldier may not be able to see the bigger picture. And in order for them to do what they need to do 100% of the time, it's going to get boring for them. So without my first sergeants and our commanders out there with the full trust of the battalion and the brigade and the JTF, I don't think we would have been able to pull this off. It got a little better when we could start doing patrols back to infantry stuff. We're going to walk up that hill. We're going to stop. We're going to observe. And then we're going to go and we're going to walk up another hill. That's what the infantry does. That's what our guys were trained to do. It hasn't been super duper exciting for them, but just trying to reiterate to them their purpose for being here and saying that as often as possible so that anytime they think about this is not fun or this is, you know, I don't see any meaning in this, that they can, you know, bring back my voice, if you will, saying, hey, you know, you're protecting the homeland. This is rarely, if ever, has happened for DOD to be down here doing this, and you are the first to do that. And that's a pretty important thing to give them is the why. Like I said earlier, when we first got on the ground, we were pretty much tied to Border Patrol. We've both created trust amongst one another. My soldiers know that when they do detect someone, they give a direction, a distance, Border Patrol is going to be there as soon as they can. Understanding it is a huge area and it's going to take some time. And across the other battalions, just seeing how the different terrain, whether it's urban or it's out here in the middle of the desert, we are with small cities interspersed, just seeing the way that Border Patrol has had to adjust the way they work in between battalion areas as well. For example, El Paso, much faster response because they have to. They have seconds to minutes to catch someone that's coming across the border, as opposed to the agents here that will track for 3-4 days as they're coming across, and then they'll wait and pick them up later. So not getting frustrated with not having those immediate results has also been a lesson for us to learn. Hey, they know where they are. They're going to get them. Your job was not in vain. You did a great job by observing and reporting what happened and just keeping our soldiers, their minds and their hearts in the mission as much as possible. And it's been a huge job. Our leaders on the ground have done a phenomenal job doing that. And I think our soldiers, when they leave here and they look back, they're going to realize they did something really special.
And kind of going off of what you had previously said about with the information sharing and fusion, part of that helps with this, doing what a sergeant major was saying, is getting that feedback loop to complete the circle. So if our guys on the line see some activity, it gets reported up and BP responds. Going back and figuring out, you know, how did that scenario end? Was there traffic tracked for a couple of days through sign cutting and then an apprehension occurred? Or was the additional force posture there enough to deter and have turnbacks occur? And then getting that information back down to the companies, getting it down to that lowest member on the team so that they understand what their actions, by them being there, how they contributed to the mission and contributed to, you know, deterring illicit activity. And traffic has been very much a key part of that piece as well.
I was an OCT at JRTC for 2 years, and oftentimes this partnership with the Border Patrol has reminded me of that when you put on your coaching hat or your consultant hat, just because you have a different perspective, you might see a problem differently, and then talking through what that means to see if there's a better solution before you return to being, you know, the partner and part of the solution. And to Sergeant Barsanti's point just now, our battalion AO actually extends outside of Big Bend sector. We have part of El Paso sector. We have sister units east and west of us, battalions that are part of our brigade task force, or at least the JTF. And one of the things I've been pretty focused on was sharing with adjacent units things that we're seeing on our boundary with them so that those don't become seams. That is something we're uniquely positioned to do because it's kind of inherent in coordinating with adjacent units. That isn't always the tendency for Border Patrol stations. So showing them the value of, hey, if we think the adversary is going to start shifting in one direction or the other, let's coordinate with the adjacent station and with our adjacent military units to make sure that we have a unified response. That's something I think we will leave as probably part of our enduring legacy from this time period, is the system to do that and the moving the dial on the tendency being to coordinate rather than say, oh, that's somebody else's problem.
Beyond talking about some of the systems and processes that Army leaders tend to bring, were there specific capabilities that you found that as a striker unit or a combat arms unit that you brought that were particularly beneficial to your partners in order to help them do the job that they were trying to do?
We were fortunate to receive striker-mounted ITN systems, a lot of new technology, a lot of new communications technology that we've been integrating into the mission, which gave us a much greater ability compared to what we had 6 months or 3 years ago when I was last in the formation to talk. That has been invaluable because a lot of our AO is not covered by cell towers. So if you don't have line of sight communications, you may not be able to communicate effectively. We've been fortunate to be able to use a lot of that and to learn how it works. So that's been a blessing in disguise of here's new equipment, integrate it into your operation, figure out how it works, which is beneficial to us for, you know, any future mission we receive, but also helped us maintain situational awareness. That's allowed us to integrate with some of the existing law enforcement data systems, and the JTF has worked really, really hard to make sure that we were creating an integrated understanding of what was going on through various digital systems. And that has progressed a lot since we first got here. And I'm very confident that the unit that's coming in behind us has a strong repository of information available to them so they can do a historical analysis to know, okay, is this in line with the new normal or is this something else when they look at analysis for activities? The other organic systems I think that are worth mentioning were the Crow's J, which is on our striker. Our brigade fielded it in the spring of 22. It's a very advanced optic that allows us to see out really far. And when you combine that with the large presence of a striker, you're able to see further than most units would be able to, and when needed, unmask so that it will make people question whether today is the day they want to cross through that area. We've employed our LRASs through the scout platoon and some of our other soldiers, again, looking out, finding things, and then various other scopes and binoculars. So that's the human eye piece. We also have other sensors that are helping us understand the activity in the area.
Yep. No, that was perfect. Anybody else want to add on to that one?
Yes, sir. I will. I've spoken about, you know, what the infantry does, get up there and walk around. I'd say our best asset that we brought with us is absolutely the soldier on the ground. They're fairly aggressive and they were chomping at the bit to get down here and do something that was going to mean something for the country. All those sensors, all those optics, all the things we brought still require a soldier on the other end to operate them. What they've done is maintain these systems, stay behind these optics, you know, move to a better vantage point, getting these strikers into the fight. They've done a wonderful job. These LRASs and a lot of this equipment's not light, and they are in full kit because there is a threat out there, and they are doing everything we ask them to do and more, as well as, like Colonel Harrison said, all the new equipment we're getting. They're integrating this within days into our patrols. This piece of equipment works here, does not work here. So not only are they carrying things that are effective, they're carrying some things that we're figuring out might need a little tweaking to make it better for the next guys. The soldier is the best sensor we brought down.
We've talked about how you were able to aid Homeland Security and some of the things that they're trying to do to improve the overall posture of our own country and its safety. Talk about how this mission has enabled your unit to still improve on itself when we look at staff processes, maintaining, I think we talked about a common operational picture, and then, you know, the individual soldier requirements that our junior leaders have to do in order to go out and execute missions. What were some of the things that were kind of unexpected benefits from being assigned to this mission?
When I first got here, I could see that the staff was moving very fast. And that, I think, was a product of what we described before. You had to have a very short flash to bang from order received to action. But at this point in the mission, I recognized that we needed to slow down a little bit and develop some tactical patience. And in some cases, fight for information at the battalion level and above to enable the companies, because all the friction was really being experienced at the company level and below. When you think about idea occurs somewhere in the JTF headquarters, translated into activity at a platoon without any of the context, it's very hard to understand purpose of that task or whether or not it makes sense. So we started by slowing down on some of our own orders production and writing complete situation paragraphs for our tasking orders so that first sergeants, platoon sergeants have the context for anything that wasn't business as usual. As that started to settle in, I think it allowed us as a battalion to identify what information requirements were still necessary and maybe some that were less necessary and prioritize the stuff that actually mattered. Understand what information I wanted as the commander and then provide that so it wasn't discovery learning to the companies. And we refined our sit rep process. We defined our cubs and our battle rhythm so that we can have effective communication without passing too much of a time burden down to the battalions. Our staff has also used Saturdays as an example where we have a lower op tempo. We still have a mission requirement, but generally speaking, it's not as demanding on a Saturday to get repetitions in on MDMP and staff LPDs facilitated by my XO and my S3 and sometimes myself. And then we've used our redeployment planning as both MDMP iterations at the battalion level and then TLPs and bottom-up refinement with the companies. One, because that's our next mission, it's important, but also so we know how to communicate more effectively. My brigade commander often says, you just need reps at those processes so that the commander and the staff, and in this case, subordinate commanders, understand how to communicate effectively. So that's one of the opportunities we've had.
If you could, while the commanders talked a little bit about how it impacted the staff, can you talk about how this mission impacted the development of your squad and platoon leaderships? Command Sergeant Major Odom?
Yes, sir. The Army rolls along. I mean, it's right there in the song. So we have to make sure that all our soldiers are still getting back for their schools, their ALCs, the BLCs. We've got a revolving door of our NCOs going to drill sergeant school, to go into recruiter school, to go on and do bigger and better things for the Army, as well as the fact that, you know, I have to be able to run a promotion board for soldiers that are spread out over several hundred miles. And so bringing my first sergeants in and running a promotion board like that, Army continues to do its thing. And our soldiers are going to be filling our spots eventually. So we have to maintain the level of education, the team live fires that we've pulled and done. We're two companies down, plus our scouts now. You know, the commander and I are out there watching those, giving feedback where needed or if wanted, and just watching our guys progress. Our mortars, who have been acting simply as 11 Bravo side of the infantry world, even though they are infantry, we've gotten them up to the Donna Ana area and allowed them to do their mortar shoot. And all that good stuff, and just to see them brighten up when they had a chance to go do their job. They're very specially trained. They've got highly specialized equipment, and they're really good at it. And to bring them with their platoon sergeant, who is now a master gunner and is a wizard at what he does, to let them get out there and just get out and do some good training, evaluate our new soldiers who've never done a live fire, those kind of things. It's very important to get that done. The ability to get people together for LPDs, a squad or a team, or even some of the platoon sergeants, is very difficult in this area. So what we've done is we've started our planning and our resourcing for the things that we know we need to hit when we get back. Everything we do down here every day is going to build the curriculum for what we're going to teach. Colonel Harrison said the PCCs, the PCIs, the patrolling routines that they've gotten into. Maybe they're not as tactically sound as they think they are. So when we get out and we see these and do these battlefield circulations and see these units move across the battlefield and how they're operating, we can use that as good or bad examples, but either way, learning is learning. And that's what we're going to focus on when we get back. Wish we had more time so that we could focus more on that junior soldier, but I've got pretty good staff sergeants. I've got good E5s and I've got really good platoon sergeants. But above all, I've got first sergeant who absolutely crush it. Very intelligent, very experienced from all different backgrounds. So I know they're out there getting after it. And it's fun to see, but it's also going to be fun to get back and teach and see these young team leaders get up and teach the new soldiers that are waiting for us when we return. Hey, we just did a real world mission and this is what we learned. And that's not really something you can gain in a schoolhouse or in a classroom environment behind a desk. This is going to be real world knowledge and it's going to be down to the lowest level. And I'm excited to see that.
One of the best training opportunities, if you want to think about it that way, has been for our forward support company. Sergeant Major and I this past weekend watched them establish a logistical resupply point under NODS in a large open space where we could train for the first time. And it was really great training, emblematic of what they've been able to do. The tyranny of distance is real out here. They had put in over 200,000 miles supporting our mission as of about 2 months ago without a single accident. That doesn't happen by happenstance. That takes a lot of leader engagement and then individual and collective discipline. Logistically, this is the best forward support company I've ever seen because by the demands of our environment, they've been pushing all classes of supply and unplanned maintenance support for organic equipment, for some new equipment we've received that we had to figure out how it actually works and how we can get it back into operation, and doing that across, again, an AO that is over 557 miles. It's pretty amazing.
If you were to advise your future replacement on things that you learned, what is the key experience that you would like to highlight to them that would be valuable for an Army leader who's taken on a mission along the southern border?
Probably just recommend to them to, as Colonel Harrison was saying earlier, our repository of information that we've been able to gather since being down here. I mean, we got down here with nothing built out. We weren't ripping out with anyone else. Yes, Border Patrol is already down here, but they operate differently than us. A lot of the systems that they use, we don't have access to. The systems we use, they don't have access to. And so trying to get all of that information compiled and then presented in a way that's digestible, that we could then put back to help us understand our AO, where to position troops, where areas of interest are, in order to best tackle the problem set. And so I would say just taking a process to go through everything and understanding this area that they're going to be working in with all the different relationships, the terrain, how the adversary operates. So if they take that, they have a good baseline to start with, and then continuing to build off of that. That way that next unit that comes in will be able to start running right away. I've been saying since we got down here, this is very much a lot of the fruits of the labor that we are doing on the ground here isn't for us. It's for that next group and even that third and fourth group that comes through here.
Command Sergeant Major Odom.
It starts with just being in shape, the physicality that's going to be required. We were lucky that we came out of Fort Carson at 6,000 feet, higher than Denver, the so-called mile high city, right? We're higher than that. And so the altitude has allowed us, when we get in pretty good shape there, we're in great shape anywhere else. We're still out at altitude here, located at Alpine, Texas. We're 4,000 feet. So if someone is not coming from nearby, it's going to be an issue. Everything here wants to kill you. The terrain, the weather, the wildlife. It's a difficult, harsh environment, and it always has been and it always will be. So you got to be able to be physically fit in order to adapt to this, from the equipment that you carry, you know, the boots you wear on your feet. Some of the lighter, more cantonment area type boots are not going to do well down here. So you've got to evaluate everything literally from head to toe of what your soldier is going to carry. And it's ounces may pounds and pounds make pain. So, you know, a lot of the walking and the hills that you're going to go up and down, they're going to test you, as well as how do you employ the vehicles that you have. You have to have vehicles here. No one battalion is going to be able to put more than one person per mile if you look at the border that you're going to cover. And the area is huge. Just the county we're sitting in now, Brewster County, is the size of the state of Connecticut. It is the largest county in Texas, and it is about a third of our area of operation. So that puts some perspective on what they're going to see, as well as the fact that you have to maintain your professionalism here at all times, because everything here minus the state park and the national park is private land. So any access you gain or lose is going to be 100% on the unit. Our soldiers, our commanders, and our first sergeants have done a wonderful job working these relationships in order to gain access to a lot of this border area. The next unit is egomaniacs or just wild men out there and want to destroy people's personal property. They're going to lose access to vast amounts of the border, and it's going to create issues when it comes to actually accomplishing the mission.
Sir Major stole most of my good ideas, as usual, so that was what I was going to say. I would add just two things. For the commander, it's important to understand the standing rules for the use of force and how to very clearly articulate what that allows us to do. Understanding you always have the inherent right to self-defense, but knowing how to ensure that the soldiers know when they can defend themselves and what constitutes something that meets the criteria within the SRUF. Always focusing on clearly articulating commander's intent. Going back to what I said before, authorities have constantly evolved. Making sure that all of your subordinate leaders know where the left and right limits are is a challenge because of the breadth of the AO, but also because of the ever-changing nature of what we are allowed to do. Beyond those two things, which is relationships are huge. There's a lady in a gas station where I'll normally go refill my vehicle. And every time I walk in there, she says, thank you for being here. So understanding that we are stewarding the Army's reputation and the entire department, as well as just the United States government, in a place where not everyone always has the most positive opinion of the United States government. We've got to understand that that's something that's always at risk. And we're fortunate in that, you know, our soldiers have been focused and disciplined and lived up to the Army values. If anyone had made some major mistakes there, it would have immediately ruined our reputation with the population, and then that would be what we're handing over to the next unit. So fortunately, we have not done that, and I have every expectation that the next unit will be able to do the same and build on those relationships.
Gentlemen, thanks for sharing your valuable insights today and your lessons learned. Is there anything else you'd like to share with your audiences or our audience about your mission and what you've done?
Yes, sir. I would say that don't rely on anything we've said to be the ground truth. If you're the next rotation to come through here, it's the truth for us at the moment. It is an ever-changing environment with a very adept enemy on the other side, or adversary, if you will. You are always being under observation down here, both from the civilian side and from the bad guy side. And I would say that take what we've given you, run with it as far as you can, and then develop your own SOPs so that the next unit is going to be even better. It is a mission worth doing. It is a battle worth fighting, and it is truly for the United States of America to be a safer and better place. I would just point out that some critics of this mission may say that, you know, it's the policy change, it's not the presence of the soldiers at the border that have made a difference. I would argue that the soldiers at the border are the policy change, and that they've done a wonderful job. And you can see by the numbers, the apprehensions, the amount of drugs, the drop in the human smuggling that's been taking place over the last few months. And I'd say that's 100% makes it a success. Successful mission.
One thing I would like to add is just that this mission is a very unique problem set, and probably, frankly, entirely different than any other mission that anyone had experience employing or being a part of, unless they were previously on one of the previous iterations of the border mission. So it presents a unique opportunity from what typically you would be operating in.
We were privileged to participate in the 24th anniversary memorial ceremony at Alpine Station for 9/11. Coincidentally, that station, the groundbreaking ceremony, actually happened on the morning, September 11th, 2001. And then fast forward to now, there's a piece of the World Trade Center and a memorial in the front. So we had soldiers take part in the wreath laying ceremony and a combined formation of Border Patrol agents, firefighters, and soldiers. And then afterward, we did an honor march with the firefighters and turnout gear from the Border Patrol Station with lots of Border Patrol agents and other law enforcement along with us to the American Legion in downtown Alpine. And that just sums up all of the players in this community and the level of support we've received, and also why this is a pretty unique and interesting mission. During my comments during the ceremony, as one of the guest speakers, I shared with them that the motto of the 12th Infantry Regiment is having been led by love of country. So I pointed out that all the people gathered there that day, we shared that. We shared a love for our country, and that was why we were doing the things we were doing. And I'm reminded of that every day out here because, you know, my wife, Cindy, my kids, Tarna and JD, back home, they're the reason why I continue to put on the uniform and get up in the morning and do this job. So it's very poignant to be in an American community conducting the mission, but thinking about my family back home. I think we've been lucky because even though we didn't bring our families with us, I don't think we've felt like we don't have a community to be a part of. They've been pretty supportive. So it's been really special.
Excellent. Thank you. Today, we discuss lessons learned from 112 Infantry's support of the southern border. You can find call products such as the Call Report on the Southern Border, MDMP Handbook, and other call products with insights on topics discussed today. The entire call catalog of print and digital publications is available for download on our CAC-enabled site. You can see all those resources by going to www.army.mil/call. There you can also request print products shipped to you. Call CTC bulletins and post-exercise report offer lessons learned from recent unit operations in a variety of environments. If you have trouble finding information on our website, use the Request for Information tab and receive direct feedback from an analyst at call. Finally, if you have a best practice to submit or a capability gap that requires a .milpf solution, submit observations directly to call using the Quickfire portal on our website. Be sure to like and subscribe to our podcast and follow us on social media. I would like to thank all our call team members, especially our collection team led by Major Craig Derenkamp, who visited the units to collect insights on lessons of the Southern Border mission. A final thanks to our podcast producer and editor, Ms. Paige Cox. Thank you for listening to Call's podcast, Insights from the Fight. We are dedicated to providing you with the insights you need to lead, train, and fight today and in the future. Join us next time for another discussion on lessons learned from the force.